Hey everyone, I'm Nurse Kelly. I'm the Chief Nurse Advocate for Wanderley, and you are listening to another episode of our podcast, The Happy Traveler. So excited for today's guest. Thank you guys all so much for jumping on with us. You're in for a super treat. Today we have Dr. Josh Luke on, who is a hospital CEO, keynote speaker, executive hospital coach and mentor, author, podcaster. He has an incredible background, educator. There's so many things, and I'm so excited for you guys to hear from him. We were lucky enough to be able to hear his keynote speech at the SIA conference in Las Vegas last month, and what a delight. So I have been able to now personally get to know him a little bit better before this podcast. I'm just chatting, and super interesting man, and a really, really impressive career. So Josh, thank you so much for jumping on with me. I'm so excited to have you on, and I guess I'm really not even sure where to start because there's so much I want to talk to you about, but do you want to just tell us about, I guess, like from when you graduated college and when you got, you know, your PhD, and just kind of from there, all of your business and entrepreneurship and everything that you've done since then, because it's so impressive. So really whatever you want to share, but I think that's where we should start, is just a little bit about you and your background.
Yeah, I think, man, I need to take you on the road with me because that was an awesome introduction. That'd be sweet. Yeah, so the story goes like this, and I'll give you guys the short version. And first of all, Kelly, it was so great to meet your team and briefly say hi to you at the event. And also in my years since I left the hospital C-suite, to see how far staffing agency and the traveler world has come with the technology, the platform you guys have is awesome. And as a hospital CEO, man, I would have loved to have it back then because that was one of my hardest problems to solve. But let's come back to that in a minute. Let me tell everybody how I kind of got to the C-suite. I remember being in high school sitting on the bench in my basketball game watching my team play and thinking, man, I got two older brothers that are professional athletes. Maybe I should have a backup plan just in case God didn't bless me with the same athletic ability. And so I decided I wanted to go into sports marketing. And that worked out great for about 7 or 8 years after graduate school. And I was kind of at the peak of my success after just 6 years, having worked for the four major sports, professional sports organizations. And I was actually representing Mark McGwire in 1998, the year he won, beat the home run record. And just kind of said to my new wife, because I just got married, that, hey, I think I want to do a career change to something that, make a career change to something that's got more of a social mission. And it ended up being healthcare. So I trained in the nursing home to be an administrator. And within a few years of being an administrator, I was having some success. And a little hospital in Anaheim, California, called me up, their administration did, and said, hey, we have a nursing home under our license, and we haven't had much success in the last few years, so we'd like to see if you'd come be our CEO. And I had a chance of a lifetime, and I went and did that. And 4 years later, I got offered to be the CEO of the other hospital across town. So that really launched me into the hospital CEO space. So that's kind of how it all started, Kelly.
Well, great. Well, you and I met when we met at SA, we discussed the whole podcast thing, because you're on mine. I'm definitely going to come on yours. But do you want to tell our audience about Dr. Luke's waiting room and any other fun stuff that you want to talk about your podcast?
Yeah, so you kind of covered it, that I'm all over the board. But guys, the best way to make sense, if you're driving right now or not somewhere where you can write or anything, is go to LinkedIn, Dr. Josh Luke on LinkedIn. I'll pop right up with this cheesy smile with some guy speaking in the background and some fancy shiny coat, because I'm known for wearing these flashy coats, sports coats. But that's where you can learn about the four books I've written. The last three were Amazon bestsellers. And Forbes asked me to come write a book for their book division about 3 years ago, and they started kind of managing and strategizing part of my career. And that really took me from being a hospital CEO strategist and really an innovator in post-acute care. I was one of the first folks to start talking about population health after the Affordable Care Act passed. And one of the first to say, hey, here's what's going to happen, because I've worked on both sides of it, and there's a lot of work that needs to be done. But Forbes really asked me to become an affordability advocate for American businesses and families. And when I started thinking about it, I wasn't sure if I wanted to write the book. And I remember my wife said to me, hey, do you remember when you lost your job as a hospital CEO and you came to me and you had the COBRA notice, and it said, hey, they want $1,400 to $1,600 a month to pay for insurance, and I'm unemployed, and I just can't justify that. Her point was this. She said, Josh, you've been a CEO for, like, gosh, almost 8 or 9 years. You've done really well. We've been good stewards of our finances, and if we can't afford health care, then who can? And she didn't mean it to be arrogant, but to be just make a really good point, which it was, mm-hmm. which is nobody in this country can afford health care. It's bankrupting businesses. it's bankrupting families. And so Forbes really gave me the platform to not switch or change my platform of being a population health strategist, where I've won some awards and stuff, but really to expand that into becoming a healthcare affordability advocate. So my current podcast, my original podcast was called the Health Wealth Podcast, and that's Health-Wealth, which is also the name of my last two books. The most recent one is Health Wealth for You, 11 Steps to Save Big and Live Healthy. And so the original podcast was Health Wealth. And once that brand was kind of launched and well-known, I said, you know, I need a flashier podcast name that gets more to the point. And so we renamed it Dr. Luke's Waiting Room, the Healthcare Authority Podcast. And Kelly, you are going to be, excuse me, the first guest on the last rendition. I say the last, but it's changed two times in the last year. The new name of the podcast that we're taping later today with you as the first guest, because you really fit the mold of who I want to have on, which is somebody who can speak to the social aspect of not being able to afford healthcare. American families, millennials, Gen Z, nobody can afford it. And so we're renaming it Spend Less on Healthcare with Dr. Josh Luke. And so that's kind of my evolution. But if you go to Dr. Josh Luke on LinkedIn or Josh Luke for Health on Twitter, I'm much more active on LinkedIn, but you can find all you ever wanted to know about me and more.
And it's so impressive because you tagged me in a post the other day and I went back and read it. And then I found out how many people were following you and had connected with you on LinkedIn and all of the great information and educational resources too that you can provide people on that platform. I had no idea. Instagram is my sweet spot, and I obviously run a lot of the social media for Wanderly as well, and we're across all platforms, but you have made some serious waves on LinkedIn, and I think that's really cool. How did you get started in all of that? Like, how did all these people just start, you know, following you, making the connections? I haven't seen it kind of the way that I've seen it with you on that kind of a platform.
So one of the things Forbes did for me is they made sure I understood the four major social media platforms, five if you count YouTube. Of course, six if you're going to count TikTok now, but I haven't really ventured into TikTok. I watch my daughter do it. Daughter's obsessed with it. But so here's the answer. I curate posts in advance for LinkedIn and Twitter that are more branding, or read my book, or here's a story. But each morning I get four or five newsletters in the healthcare space. And if I see a headline that is of interest to my following. And guys, think of your social media. By the way, it's no accident that Kelly and I met each other and hit it off, because when you're a social media influencer, regardless of the platform, there's a quick understanding of what each other's trying to accomplish. And whether it's Insta or LinkedIn or Twitter, it doesn't matter. And as Kelly said, she got to know me by me tagging her when we'd barely even spoken once, because it was a post that I knew would be of relevance to her. And so the mistake people make on LinkedIn often is they tag people with huge followings, even though they might not have any interest in that topic. And all that does is irritate people like Kelly and I that might have big followings, because, look, we'll be nice the first time, and I don't want to speak for you, Kelly. But after that, if it's not in my lane, and guys, think, I was the first, the keynote speaker, the first ever Masters of LinkedIn Summit about a year and a half ago in Los Angeles, okay? And the reason they picked me along with all these other millennials was because I was Gen Xer. They're like, hey, this old guy gets it, right? He's doing really well. And it's because we learned those things, which is, hey, tag people who are relevant. Tag them in the comments instead of in the body of the post sometimes, so it looks a little cleaner. Look, when I tag Kelly in the comments, she still gets a push notification, and she can look it up. And guess what? She's going to look up the comment and the actual post now. So the way I grew on LinkedIn was by actually not just long-form media, but what I was going to say is LinkedIn killed the long-form story about 2 years ago when they wanted to promote video, because they saw that Instagram and Facebook were bringing people back four and five times a day to check their feed, and LinkedIn was a weekly, something you went to weekly, and so they killed the story. These people asked me to write for them, and then I submitted one story, and instead of getting the 20,000 views it normally got in the first two or three days, it was at like 400. And I emailed and I said, hey, what in the world's going on? Yeah. And they said, hey, we're no longer promoting the pulses or the stories. We want to do video. Josh, would you consider doing a daily video? And so for about a year, I did the Health Wealth Daily Video Minute with Dr. Josh Luke. And it was native video, Kelly, the kind where you stick your arm out and you record and you just talk about a relevant topic. Mm-hmm. Hashtag two or three, never more than three on LinkedIn, folks. I don't know, Kelly can tell you the Instagram rule, but don't do more than three hashtags or it just looks like you're trying to gravy train. Okay. And let me give you one last LinkedIn. So before I give you that last tip, that's when my following shot all the way up to 30,000. And at 30,000, LinkedIn caps you, and you can no longer ask people to connect with you. They have to follow you. And so you really, truly understand that these people are subscribing to you. They're subscribing to your content.
Sure.
They are subscribing to the content that you provide. And that's actually gratifying to see that in that, you know, 9-10 months since I hit 30,000, I think I'm at 38,000 now, but it's not about having 200,000 followers. It's really just about having a lane of people that look forward to coming to see your content.
Definitely. I think it's so important to just have something either interesting or entertaining in a post to capture people. As long as you're providing them, what I always say is providing them a service, but if you're teaching them something, if you're entertaining them, if you're making them laugh, I think that's really all that matters. It's the posts that are just, you know, about somebody, just about themselves, or the lunch that they just ate, or things like that. I don't think that that's how you grow your following ever, just because they're not
offering anybody a service. That's a one-way ticket out of LinkedIn. I mean, way even worse than Facebook or where you can get away with that. On LinkedIn, if it doesn't have any business value, people like me are going to call you on that and say this is inappropriate for LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. We absolutely agree with that. That's so cool. Well, I'm so glad that you just shared all of that. Thank you for all those tips and things as well. I'll take it back to SIA because I just wanted to hear your opinion on the conference and I guess on the travel nursing, travel healthcare professional industry as a whole. You know, have you had an experience with us before? What do you think? How was
you
want to
hear a funny story, Kelly?
What?
I got to tell you a funny story.
Yeah, tell me.
So I was the CEO of Safety Net Hospitals, the neediest of the needy in the inner city, the hospitals that most people don't go to by choice, you know, mostly for immigrants in the inner city. And I was proud of that. That's who we served. That's who I wanted to serve. We were great at being what we needed to be great at, and we didn't worry about anything else. But what I wanted to say is anytime I had contracts for not so much travelers, but just staffing agencies, they'd tell me at 10 a.m., yeah, we have your three nurses for the 7 p.m. shift. And then at 3 o'clock, they'd call and say, oh, they all called off today. And what that translated to is that UCLA Health or Cedars-Sinai or somebody that paid a few bucks an hour more actually needed them. And so, of course, being the entrepreneurial folks that the small mom-and-pop staffing agencies were, they went where the money was. So I had a lot of frustration early in my career as a hospital CEO with staffing. And also, and I think I owned this on the stage at SIA, that, hey, as a CEO, the sign that you need travelers and staffing agency support is sometimes a sign of failure. So anytime that I – and that's not necessarily the case anymore. But when I was a CEO, that was definitely the case. So I always worked to eliminate – the contract staffing. But that said, it's easier said than done. And nowadays, it's not exactly the case because the union costs for nurses are so great that sometimes getting a specialized traveler nurse is absolutely a way better formula. But what I saw at SIA that I thought was really cool was two things. The technology, and you guys were at the forefront of that, Wanderley, going, wow, there's just one portal, one website, one company, one chief nurse advocate in Kelly that I can call and say, hey, here's my problem. I need you to fix it. Call me back in the next week and fix it. You know, and that's really what you want as a CEO, is you just want somebody to bring you those solutions. The other thing that we did at SIA that was unique is over the course of 3 or 4 years, I got about 10 requests to teach different vendors in the hospital space how to sell in the value-based care era. They kept calling me and saying, hey, I can't get the conversation past price. They just want to go with the lowest price, and I'm the higher value provider, not the lowest cost. So Josh, teach me how to sell to hospitals in the value-based care era. And after doing that 5 or 6 times, I said, hey, I should just make this into a class and market it. And so I had a live session in LA called Selling to Hospitals, $800 a head, and it sold out. It was crazy. So then I said, okay, I'm going to put this online because I'm still getting more requests. And so I have an online masterclass now called Selling to Hospitals in the Value-Based Care Era. You can go online right now and purchase it. It's like, I think, $299 with the code. But it takes about 3 hours, and it teaches you about peer-to-peer selling, whether if a nurse is buying your product, then a nurse needs to be her point of contact or his point of contact. If a doctor is the chief decision maker, then you need a physician. If it's somebody else, let me give you a different example too, Kelly. If you're selling to the lab, or if you're selling to the pharmacy, well, those folks aren't salespeople, they're scientists. So are you relying on them to close your sale for you? And for a staffing agency, it's oftentimes a nurse, but sometimes it's not. I know when I was running hospitals, I'm like, why would I have a nurse that I have to pay an extra $15 an hour doing the staffing when I can pay just somebody who's got a good head on their shoulders, who understands nurses and their needs? And that's different at every hospital. But to answer your question about what was unique about SIA is they were the first to ever say, we've heard such good things about your online selling to hospitals masterclass, Josh. We'd like you to do a live session. And I'm telling you, it was the best breakout session I did. So I did the keynote session, the closing keynote, which I got great feedback on. Had two or three people come at the table where I was signing books across from you guys, Kelly, and say, hey, that was the best keynote I've ever seen. I have a lot I want to follow up with you on. But an hour later, we did the breakout, and we talked about peer-to-peer selling. We talked about spending limits, meaning as a hospital CEO, I only could approve 20 grand. And so if your traveler contract was 30 or 40 for the term, I would say, hey, Kelly, I need you to break that into two and send me one now and one in a month. And if your policy doesn't allow that, you're going to lose the sale. So figure it out. Mm-hmm. And that's really, it's not rocket science. It's just being creative and flexible and making one call to your compliance and attorney and saying, we're going to bill them separately. And if they don't, you know, come through on their word the first time, well, we won't work with them again. So it's things like that that I shared with people that the last point I'll make on selling to hospitals, because it really was awesome out there, was this. So often you're selling, you're trying to set yourself apart as a staffing agency from somebody else. And my decision has nothing to do with your value proposition. It has everything to do with some of the things I just mentioned, like my cash flow. And can I put the nurse through payroll and pay you a separate commission fee versus paying you whatever creativity we can do, because maybe cash flow is my critical issue. Maybe the delay in getting the chart for the new nurse on board is my issue. Whatever it is, it may have nothing to do with what sets you apart from the others. I just need you to listen first, meet me where I'm at, and solve my problem, because you don't even know 90% of the time what's on my mind. And the last point I'll make on that is, look at matrixed hospital companies, Kelly, like Tenet and Providence and others. They have hospitals within 10 miles of each other that may have the same problem. They call themselves matrixed organizations, which means they think they act and look alike and to make decisions the same. And even if they did have the same problem, they have different CEOs who handle things differently, and nothing's ever the same. So without listening first, folks, that's the best piece of advice I can give you on selling to hospitals. Listen first, solve my problem, become my go-to person.
Definitely. I'm so glad that you covered that at SIA too, because it's such a powerful message and so many people probably had no idea and had a ton of questions for you. I'm sure you're probably still following up with people from just that conference. And you and I chatted just briefly about this a little bit, but the SIA conference was very interesting for me this year because I work in technology, and technology is absolutely changing the industry, and Wanderly for sure is a huge part of that. And it was just so interesting to me because I don't feel as if that conversation is really ready to be had quite yet, because there's so much that, you know, we've been doing this the old fashioned way, or I guess the way it's always been done for so long. So it's so interesting. So I was just curious about your perspective on technology in general. I know you're now familiar with the Wanderly platform and what we do, which is housing, you know, multiple agencies' pay packages on one platform so that the travelers can compare right side by side, which is what the long solution that they've been asking to do for a while. But what's your opinion on the way technology, I guess, is changing a lot of industries? Ours is, you know, travel, healthcare professionals and Wanderly in general.
Kelly, you guys have really nailed it. And I just want to compare what you guys are doing to what I just said about a hospital CEO. I want to make one call for all things staffing, whether it's even licensure, recertification. I need a special certification for a nurse to do A, B, or C. I want to call Nurse Kelly and have her say, Josh, I will take care of that. Give me a few days. Can I have 48 hours? Because I know somebody that can help with that. Mm-hmm. I don't want to make three calls. And that's what I see that Wanderly and technology has brought to traveling nurses is, man, I'm getting called by eight other people. Don't even remember who four of them are because they're new, and don't remember what their hourly rate is or what my contract says with them or what the commitment is and all this stuff. You guys just put it all there in front of them, and it's really just no different than a hospital CEO. If I'm a traveling nurse, I just want to be able to go there and maybe even put a little arm's length distance between some of those other folks so I don't have to let them down. But to really say, hey, here's the two or three agencies and projects I'm focused on, and really work within your platform and the capabilities it provides to help them with that. Let me tell you, as a hospital CEO, what I wanted from a traveler. I just wanted reliability. That's it. I didn't want the person that just wanted the highest hourly wage. You know, luckily for me, a lot of my traveling nurses lived in Newport Beach. So that's an easy sell. But that cost a few extra bucks. But when I needed a specialized nurse in the city of Anaheim, well, Newport's a 20-minute commute, and it's against traffic, and it's meaning there is no traffic at you know, 6 a.m. and 6:30 in the morning. So it worked out okay for me. So reliability, and I think you guys provide the platform to get rid of a lot of the gamesmanship that I experienced frustration with as a CEO. So I do see technology changing the industry dramatically. I think the issue that in the industry that's probably most relevant nationally, though, Kelly, is just those states that are still impacted by high union penetration.
Sure.
I've actually had the now president of who used to be Dignity Health, and now, of course, they merged, and they have a new name, and it's escaping me right now. But Marvin Quinn, who is the CEO, the president of that new company, who used to be the COO for Dignity, Marvin Quinn said two things on stage. Oh, it's Common Spirit. That's the name. I just came in. He's the president. He said two things on stage. He and I present a lot. And he said, my wife's a nurse, and she's a retired nurse, and she says the last place she ever wants to be is in a hospital. And I'm like, that's awesome that we're finally at a place where we can acknowledge that as hospital executives. But then he also said, hey, Josh, I actually would prefer to use a traveler or contract staff over a union nurse because I have more flexibility. It's actually just as cheap or cheaper when you put the benefits in. I'm like, wow, that's crazy to even hear somebody say that. Because when I was running hospitals, that wasn't the case. But of course, it's been several years since I had two unions at one of my hospitals, and they're really a game changer. So don't underestimate the impact of those states like California, New York, Michigan that are heavily impacted by unions and how they're going to impact the staffing industry.
Sure. Well, I like that you talk a lot about, you know, being cost efficient and then just being overall production efficient as well, because it's so interesting to me. We've in this new, maybe like last decade, we'll say technology has gone to a place where it's starting to automate things so quickly and making them so much easier that people are losing jobs. And I feel like that is a conversation that people don't want to have because it's not comfortable. But I even just think about like Amazon doing the Prime. I mean, they went from being, you know, a website and that was great, you could shop, but to being, I mean, taking out small local businesses because you can get things so much quicker, easier, you don't have to go anywhere. And I think that is kind of, it's changing. So what are your thoughts on technology and kind of automating things for someone like you who needs things faster and cheaper versus the old fashioned way of how we used to do business and how we used to shop? I mean, what are your thoughts on, it's not even really a question, I'm just curious what your opinion is.
Yeah. You asked earlier about like my speaking topics and am I there to entertain or to educate? And I told you people call me an edutainer, but one of my four or five topics is actually millennial culture, even though I'm a Gen Xer, a really proud Gen Xer, because what I talk about is as I traveled as a speaker, starting in 2014, I left the hospital C-suite because I had so many requests to speak and just started speaking and wrote the books. And one of the things I observed between 2015 and 2016, and folks, if you're a Gen Xer or a boomer, roll your eyes one last time when I use the M word here in a second, when I say millennial culture is now American culture. And I realized that in 2016 because I quit hearing things like this. My mom would never use an iPad to manage her care. My dad would never use an iPhone or an iWatch. And now, guess what? Mom and dad are using both of those things because the technology got so good that all the old things we did to manage healthcare went by the wayside because they weren't as relevant. They took more time, all those things. So I'm a firm believer in millennial culture. Millennial culture is really based on technology and immediate, for lack of a better word, gratification, immediate satisfaction, if you will. And so, yeah, there's frustration. I teach, as I mentioned, I've been teaching at the University of Southern California. I now also teach at Hope International University in Fullerton, a faith-based organization. And one of the things I tell my students all the time, and In-N-Out Burger is the best example of this. I firmly believe, Kelly, I'm going to guess that you're a millennial, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, born between 82 and 99. Okay, born between 82 and 99. So, okay.
Yep.
As long as you're in there, nobody's going to ask your age. But here's my point. You guys have never had to wait in line at Starbucks as long as you were able to use your iPhone. And every other restaurant caught on. In-N-Out Burger still hasn't, because they've never needed to, but at some point culture is going to outweigh demand for that best burger in the West Coast, because Kelly's never had to wait in line anywhere. Why would she wait at In-N-Out Burger? You know what I mean?
It is so true. And I think that that's what scares people, is that when we automate things like that, or you don't need as many people doing the jobs, that you don't, when you have technology, especially with Wanderly, which is, the people just don't, they're so fearful, I think, because it's going to change everything. It's truly going to disrupt everything. And it's not that they're fearful of us or of joining us or being a part of the team. It's just of how much things are going to change, because it's just not, it's been done the same way for so long, and technology has changed the world.
So let me answer that question more directly from my perspective, and I, you know this, and it's not something that a lot of people would know, but as a safety net hospital, I probably am going to go to Wanderly once or twice and say, man, I don't know if I can afford these good nurses on their platform, because the local guys that only have two or three nurses a day are coming in at $15 and $20 lower per hour, because they have local travelers. And so what I think is going to happen in the industry as a whole with technology, not so much with Wanderly, because I think you guys are the head of the class for this, is that I call them the haves and the have-nots, the not-for-profit hospitals, those that are, you know, academic and affiliated with the state, county government. They're going to love, and they already do, the technology that you provide and cost. One of the things we do in the selling to hospitals, Kelly, is I have a list of four things that the four criteria for making a decision on a purchase. And for me as a safety net hospital, price was the first one, quality was the second, operational flow was the third, and fourth was responsiveness. Is Nurse Kelly going to call me back when I call her and need something? Well, for the haves, I was a have-not, right? A safety net hospital, just, you know, serving the needy to the needy, fighting for another day, hopefully having enough cash to keep operating. The haves, the not-for-profits, the big national chains, they flip those four things on their head, where price becomes the least relevant. Quality, responsiveness, and operational flow are the most critical. And that's where Wanderly hits an absolute home run, solves all three of those problems. The order isn't really relevant. Your quality is going to be great, because that's who you are and what you command and demand. Your operational flow, I mean, here you are doing a podcast, let alone having great customer service and being there for your customers to answer any questions. And all those other things that come along with responsiveness. So to me, I've shared three or four anecdotes from the selling to hospitals, but that those four criteria and where they get flipped, I think, is the one where a lot of people go, I've never thought of that, but it's so true.
Definitely. It is so true. That's so crazy. Well, and thank you for all the compliments. We really do. We work hard over here. And thank you also for not shying away for some of the, like, tougher questions, because some people just don't want to have, you know, the conversation about the ways that technology is doing all of the things that you just mentioned and how we feel that we're changing things. And it's nice it's refreshing that you're open to chatting about it, and to also to seeking out new options and things like that for yourself and for your audience too, because I know it's ginormous. And I want to know what's next for you. So what's your end goal? Is there an end goal? What's your mission? Are there more books in the works? I know that the new podcast is coming out, which is so exciting, and I'm sure you'll continue to speak, but do you have, like, one accomplishment or one, you know, big milestone you want to hit? What are you thinking?
2020, Kelly, thanks for asking that, because you're going to break the news, because it's no longer under seal, which is the government's word for you aren't allowed to talk about this. Mm-hmm. I was the CEO of four hospitals, and I turned two of them in for doing things that I thought were inappropriate as a whistleblower. And this year, the seal was lifted, and so I'm allowed to speak to them. And so my new presentation next year, I'll be doing a TED Talk, but I've never done a TED Talk by choice. I just haven't thought I had the right anecdote. Is going to be called Whistleblower: Why Doing the Right Thing is Always the Right Thing. And right now I'm shopping the book for somebody else to write, actually, because I think it'd be more interesting for somebody else to write about my experiences. But more importantly, the book, Kelly, is not about Josh's experience behind the scenes with these two whistleblowing companies. It's about a few things. How, by doing the right thing, I'm basically unhirable as a hospital CEO, because companies are afraid of somebody who might turn them in. And I really had to find, you know, being ostracized from an industry where I was thought of as a leader for many years, still am, but just not somebody they want on their team. Where I had to find the bright side of things, which is the fact that I was home, you know, starting a home-based business while my kids were in middle school and high school, and now one of them is a freshman in college. I started the process of walking in the park an hour a day with my wife and exercising 3 or 4 days a week, which I'd never been able to do, and really saying, hey, I believe that doing the right thing is the right thing. It's not about the money. The money is never at the end of the lawsuits and everything what you think it's going to be. But it's about being able to sleep at night and do the right thing. So my keynote, folks, if you're a member of a nurse association in your state, if there's one thing you can do for me, you can email me. I'll make my email is easy. It's dr.luke, dr.luke, at health-wealth.com. Dr.luke at health-wealth.com. Email me or email your state association and say, hey, we need to have this guy come as a keynote speaker. Copy me on it. I'll follow up from there. I'll send you a free copy of my most recent book just for doing that for me. How's that? Just for your listeners, Kelly. But guys, if you're a case manager, social worker, nurse practitioner, if whatever it is, local staffing, state staffing, any, I can go speak to any audience because my message is so broad. But that's what I do for a living. That's how I feed my family. And that's really was the bright spot becoming a public speaker, and the fact that I chose to do the right thing by being a whistleblower in two situations where the government quickly said, yes, we agree with you, and struck a settlement with both of those companies.
Wow. Yeah, that's interesting. That is so great. And I'm so glad that you just said that too. I feel like you and I were truly cut from the same cloth because I think I've built a career also, which is much shorter and less impressive than yours, but it is for sure, I think, off of advocacy and trying to, even when it's tough or weird or makes it awkward or uncomfortable, trying to do the right thing. So thank you. You just spoke directly into me, and I'm so appreciative of that. And I can't wait for all the exciting things that are coming from you and from your team and your talks. And we're definitely going to be following along. I know how much the Wanderlei team enjoyed your keynote at SIA. So everybody, send him an email, book him. Absolutely, we will not be disappointed by any means. Dr. Luke, do you have anything else that you would like to add before we close out, especially, you know, where people can find you and things like that?
Sure. You guys can, again, easiest way to find me is on LinkedIn at Dr. Josh Luke. You can find me on Twitter at Josh Luke for Health. That's the number 4 Health. I also, guys, founded the National Readmission Prevention Collaborative. My first book was about readmission prevention. That's kind of what took me into the speaking space. There was so much demand as a thought leader on hospital readmission prevention. If that's interesting to you, you can go to nationalreadmissionprevention.com. I know those are three long words, but they're three words you know. nationalreadmissionprevention.com. And one last thing, since all of you are nurses, we are an online CEU contact hour provider. I can get you 4 CEU for your nurse license renewal in the next 2 or 3 hours online with the 3 programs we offer at the National Readmission Prevention Collaborative. And if they are of interest to you, they're all online. You print out your certificate right when you're done. One is on readmission prevention, one is on bundled payments, and one is on transitional care. And they are all, is it ANCC? Is that the name of the organization that that the nurses get relicensed? Well, it's official. Whatever it is, guys, if you need licensure, CEU contact hours, check out nationalreadmissionprevention.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And thank you for being a guest on today. We are so lucky to have you. So thank you for taking the time out to come on with me.
Anytime. Let's do it again next year at SIA.
Yeah, actually, that's a great idea. And hopefully I'm going to try to speak as well at SIA next year. So that would be really, really fun.
I'll be there. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you so much again, everybody. That is Dr. Josh Luke, and we are just so honored to have him on. Please, please, please go check him out. You will absolutely not be disappointed. He has a wealth of knowledge to share with all of you, and we're very lucky to have heard him speak, have him be a fan of Wanderlei, and to come on The Happy Traveler. So I'm Nurse Kelly. I'm the Chief Nurse Advocate for Wanderlei, and that is another episode. We will see you next week.